This is episode 5 of The Living Reminders with Mary and Blake.
2% doesn't sound like much. But 2% of the entire planet, of every person on it, that's more than the world's 10 largest cities combined. It's 140 million people. And like that, they were gone.
All the way from Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to The Living Reminders. It's a podcast dedicated to the show The Leftovers on HBO. We're still here, and so are you, so let's talk about BJ and the AC. Suddenly I'm hidden, it's the darkness of the dawn, and your friends are gone. I'm your host, Mary Larson.
My name is Blake, and I think Jesus would really like to go out in a Viking funeral. What do you think?
Was that Viking? Is that really what that was?
That's a Viking funeral. Setting it out on the pyre and then lighting it aflame on a river of some sort. You seen that on Game of Thrones.
Yeah, so that's why I was confused that it was Viking.
Yeah, it's a Viking funeral.
I was wondering that if it was a Westeros funeral, and then I was wondering, what's that land in with a white tree and they burn people in Lord of the Rings?
Oh.
But the guy was like not dead.
Oh, crap.
The white tree place. Oh,
I feel so stupid for not knowing this.
How do I not know this? Because of an M, maybe? No.
I'm going to look it up right now. Keep talking.
Okay. Anyway, I just kept picturing that, and that poor guy wasn't dead. So, poor baby Jesus.
It's Gondor.
Gondor. Oh, Gondor. Anyway, I just kept thinking of Gondor. I knew baby Jesus wasn't going to burn.
You didn't think so?
No.
Why not?
Because I felt like this episode was very Jesus heavy.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I mean, when Kevin swore and all that kind of stuff and then his car broke, I felt like Jesus, you know, it was his birthday. And you don't burn a kid on his birthday episode.
Especially don't say goddamn Jesus on his birthday.
No. So it was Jesus's birthday and, you know, I just knew he wasn't going to burn. Plus, it was a Nerf gun and they were blowing it in the middle of the winter onto an icy lake.
Yeah. Oh, did you notice how quickly that Nerf gun like caught on fire, by the way?
It goes to show you don't play with fire with Nerf guns.
Oh my God. Like, I'm surprised I didn't kill myself as a kid when I thinking about this.
Yeah, Nerf guns are probably very flammable.
It's almost worse than fireworks.
So before we get into this week's topic, Blake, you said that there were a couple of things that you wanted to talk about that we missed from last week.
Yep. Let's go over what we forgot. Okay, so the first one that we had that we talked about, but we didn't know what the heck it was that painting that Matt was talking to and begging for help. Help me! As he, like, tried to, like, you know.
The cover. One that I called Prometheus?
Yeah. Because, as we all know, Prometheus is a biblical figure. I know.
Anyway.
The painting, thanks to Brandon Amrosino of Vox.com, I found out is a painting of Job. It was portraying Job with his wife, and Job was sitting dejected as his wife poured water over his head and trying to comfort him.
Oh.
So it was the inverse of what we had seen in that scene with Matt and his wife. You know, he was the one that was
taking care of his
taking
wife.
Care of her, and now he's looking to God to get take you know, for him, you know, to get better and figure out how to make this all work.
And who helped us get this clue?
One of our great listeners, Jeffrey Rizzo. Attaboy, Jeffrey.
He pointed us to this article. Thank you so much, Jeffrey, because we had no clue what that painting was.
I've actually since gone on and tweeted with Brandon Amorosino of Vox.com. Do yourself a favor and go read his recaps of the shows. It's absolutely brilliant. This guy really knows what he's talking about. Great allegories to Christ and the Bible. Love reading it. Very entertaining, but also very informative. Do yourself that favor. Also, the other thing that we missed too was the progression of the birds. We talked about the, what the hell were they?
The pigeons.
Pigeons, yeah. How they were like the dirty bird. They were the dirty doves, like they're kind of cousins. What we didn't talk about was that the first sighting was one pigeon. The second sighting was two pigeons. The third sighting was three pigeons. Again, three warnings or three ways of God helping Matt, or maybe even the vice versa, someone telling Matt, hey, don't do this. You know, it's God's way of sending the two boats and helicopter three ways out. And Matt either didn't take it or did take it. And he got screwed up as a result of that. So those are the things that we missed. All right, kid, what do you say we get into our brand new segment? Let's play Figure Out That Title.
It was called BJ and the AC. Right?
Yeah. Sorry, yes.
Wait, did you like how I danced when I said that?
Yeah,
BJ and the AC. Like, I figured that it was going to be like a new band. BJ's and the AC. I don't know, but
yeah, no, that's bad.
I did not get this title at all.
I didn't get this title at all either. And our buddies over at the GR podcast, they actually beat me to the punch by the time that I figured it out. They threw it on Twitter. I swear to God, because they knew that I was going to do it at the same time. What they ended up coming up with, and I think everybody else came up with, was the initials stood for Baby Jesus and the Antichrist.
Ooh, nice job.
I know, guys, right?
The Guilty Remnant podcast people are brilliant.
You beat us, damn it. We also got an email from Serena6783. She emailed us saying that she thinks the title means Baby Jesus and Antichrist. Since the show has such religious undertones, it's the simplest thing that she could think of. And she's looking forward to our next podcast. So,
aww.
I know, I think that's pretty cool. So,
thanks, Serena.
Hey, Serena, we're going to be with you, girl. Is it Sirena? I don't know, it's whatever your name is, Serena. Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. And thank you for the great information, even though the GR podcast beat us to it. Damn you guys.
But we love them nonetheless.
It's time to reheat the leftovers.
This episode did not start off with the awesome fresco painting and beautiful haunting music of Max Richter. Mm-mm. Instead, it started off with a wicked creepy opening sequence with baby dolls and baby doll heads. But what made this opening super cool was it was backed by the Black Keys.
My favorite band of like all time. And when I heard this song, I nearly creamed my pants. I thought it was so cool that they had the Black Keys. And the words, and I'm just going to read a couple of lyrics to you. I'm just trying to warn you, you do good to move on. No, won't hurt me none, because I'm not the one.
I don't even know what that means. What do you think that means?
It means that what they're making, these dolls, what we end up figuring out, is that
Jesus.
It's going to be Baby Jesus.
Yeah.
The problem is that ain't Baby Jesus.
No.
And it's a fake facsimile of Jesus. Better yet, it's probably not even accurate as Jesus.
Well, so they put this little baby doll, they dress him up, and they stick him in the manger. I was really upset because they had all of the rest of the family there. They had the sheep, they had the animals, and this old like porcelain or plastic set. And yet, they had to go out and buy a brand new baby Jesus.
Yeah, where did the baby Jesus from last year go?
Did he go away in the sudden departure? Like, where's the original baby Jesus that came with this manger set? Because manger sets, like nativity sets, mm-hmm. always have a baby Jesus. So who lost it? You know who had it?
Who?
Reverend Matt.
No, that was a spare one.
Oh, spare. Yeah, right.
My ass.
Because that's what they sell. They sell spare baby Jesuses without the nativity set. No, I think Reverend Matt is so into his religion that he was like, I'm going to take the baby Jesus home. Because that's...
Baby Jesus, show me where Matt touched you.
Oh, my goodness. No, but like that, at least that baby Jesus looked like it matched everybody else. I don't know. Maybe I'm going way too far on a tangent.
I think that says more about the place of faith within this leftovers world.
Who has an extra baby Jesus?
Nobody. No one has a spare
Matt
Jesus.
Matt did. That's just weird. I don't care. Maybe this isn't a big plot point, but it's not like he even bought an extra baby doll. That was an obvious baby Jesus from a nativity set.
I think it speaks to the overall general feeling, again, to the place of faith within this leftovers world. What you're finding out in this episode is that there's a lot of misguided faith. You're finding that with, you know, finding the baby Jesus, Kevin's mission to find the baby Jesus. You're finding that with Tom, with all of his faith put in Wayne. You're finding that with Matt, with all of his faith placed in a God that isn't speaking to him. And it's all misguided somehow, some way. And they're trying to figure out a way to make it cohesive, and there is none.
Did you like that this episode was about Christmas time when it's like almost Christmas in July right now?
How about the worst Christmas episode or TV show or movie or anything of the sort I've ever seen in my life.
I don't know. Isn't Die Hard about Christmas?
Die Hard is the greatest Christmas movie of all time.
But people die in that one.
It doesn't matter. It is. I challenge anybody to find me a better Christmas movie than Die Hard.
Elf.
Nope. Not
I
even
love
close.
Elf.
Not even close. John McClane would kick the shit out of Buddy the Elf.
Mm-mm. Mm-hmm. Smiling's his favorite. So, I digress. Mother Hen, a.k.a. Patty, but let's be real, we're just calling her Mother
Hen. She's Mother Hen.
Why is she randomly at the police station talking to Kevin?
Because Kevin wanted to get her in to speak to her about the dance that's happening.
Yeah, but like, I feel like she wouldn't care if Kevin... If Kevin sent her a little text message and said, hey, Mother Hen, can you stop on by around 11 a.m.? I'd like to chat with you.
She'd blow it off.
Yeah, she'd just write back, F you, smiley face. In a Sharpie.
Because otherwise we wouldn't be able to read it.
Exactly. So I don't know how she got there or why she's participating, but I kind of liked how he was like, hey, you want some water, some coffee, some Drano?
That was awesome.
That was really cool. But then she gave it back to him because he said, you know, please don't come to the dance. Please don't come.
People want to spend time with their family. They want to let loose.
Yeah, yeah. And she writes on her little pad, there is no family.
So what does that mean about her relationship then with the rest of her group, the GR?
Oh, I don't think she gives one flying fig Newton about them. Like, that
Wait, time out. Did you just say flying fig Newton?
Yeah, I really don't feel comfortable swearing. I know that this is an explicit podcast.
Okay.
But, you know, I have a 1 year old. I need to be better than this. So
we're talking about baby Jesus too.
Yes. I mean, it was his birthday. And you saw what happened when Kevin swore.
Oh, I know.
And he didn't even do a real swear. He said like a PG swear. So I'm not saying anything because I need my car to work. So Patty, I don't think Patty thinks of the GR as her family, mm-hmm. even though they live together, even though they go on these missions together. I see Mother Hen as she just thinks they're peons.
Mm-hmm.
She thinks that they are just pawns mm-hmm. and that she is the queen or king of the chess. Now, mind you, I don't know if the Guilty Remnant has a national office.
Yep.
Like, I assume they do because I don't know where they're getting all their money. But in this town, I feel like Patty doesn't think these people are her family.
That they are just tools in the toolbox.
Yeah. I mean, she could care less if people show up, if people leave, if people go. She doesn't have any caring for them. So to her, there is no family. I want to know the backstory behind Mother Hen. I want to know what made her so mad that she loves the GR.
Why is she so vindictive? I actually asked the GR podcast why they think that she's so vindictive. So I can't wait to listen to their podcast to see what they have to say about this.
I think it's because she's always had bad hair. Always had bad hair. I mean, the other person who has bad hair is mom hair.
Mom haircut. Oof.
Mom haircut, who didn't die in this episode.
Nope.
But we didn't see her get back in the big van at the end. But you know who had bad hair again? Was Lori. When Patty, you know, Mother Hen pulls down that picture of Lori,
It
was bad hair Lori. Because Lori's hair has gotten better since she's been hanging out with Meg.
Definitely. The picture was definitely pre-VO5 treatment.
Yes, it was. I agree. Literally, that's what my note said. My note said, wow, this picture is old because Lori has bad hair.
And did you notice Mother Hen's like smug little look as she gave that picture to Kevin? Like, she was happy to give that to him.
I want to know her backstory. You know how Kevin didn't know he went to school with Nora?
Yes.
I wonder if Patty, Mother Hen, went to school with Kevin and she was like the loser kid in class.
So she had Lainey Bogg syndrome.
Yeah, and people
but she
didn't
just wasn't
like
pretty.
Her. She wasn't pretty. She felt invisible. And now she's taking this invisibility to a whole new level. Like, mm-hmm. she is just that mad, cranky, loser syndrome kid that has now grown up and has power.
She's like an adult emo kid.
Yes, except instead of wearing black,
she's wearing white.
White is the new black. That's what it is. So she leaves, you know, without drinking Drano, and Kevin gets told that baby Jesus has been stolen. He doesn't really care.
No, he's like, am I supposed to give a shit?
Yeah.
Oh, the other thing I liked about this too was, you know, he's asking Mother Hen to not show up, all with the intent of him wanting her to show up. Like, so he's like, so we just gonna arrest these guys. We can get them out of our lives. We can throw them in jail and see you later. So I like that. I like that he thought that he was playing her. Of course, all the while we figure out that she was playing him. It's crazy talk, right?
Well, he should just know better than to mess with women, because women are sneaky. Guys think like, oh, I have the bronze. I have my zip ties. I'm going to arrest you guys. Mother Hen, she has been planning this for some long time. You mm-hmm. do not mess with a cranky woman. So Kevin's leaving and he calls Tom. And of course, Tom's phone is no longer in service, because didn't Wayne break his phone?
Yeah, well, broke it right in front of his face.
Yeah.
Like, snapped the thing right in half.
Tom needs to stop at Verizon. I mean, they should hopefully still be around. Get yourself a new phone, Bo.
Get the prepaid phone, you know? Come
yeah.
on. Call your dad, bro. Come on. What's the matter with
you? But when you do see him, he does have a phone in his hand. It's that stupid yellow phone with the stupid smiley face. Mm-hmm. Where the heck are Tom and Christine? Are they at a YMCA? Are they at a homeless shelter? Where were they?
I have no idea. It looked like they were in a crazy like place.
That's what I thought too. At first, I thought they were in a crazy place, because you always see people in crazy places, like playing board games, hanging out.
Wearing robes.
Yeah, walking around half naked.
With your penis hanging out.
Oh my God, penis.
That's the first time we've seen penis on a show in a long time.
Well, I think we saw it once when there was a slave in Game of Thrones.
Oh yeah, you're right.
And I saw one penis once on Sex and the City. There was this guy and he like dove into the water.
Oh, okay. So, oh, it wasn't this like the super hot guy that dove into the water?
I think it was an old gross guy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it wasn't anything.
See, it shows you how much I know about Sex and the City.
Well, they never show handsome man's penis, I'll tell you that.
Well, this guy definitely wasn't handsome either.
No. What language was he speaking?
He was speaking Greek.
Oh, I thought he sounded like Borat.
Great success.
I really did. I was like, this guy reminds me of Borat. Whatever made up language he was trying to be.
Yeah, he was speaking Greek. I don't know what the translation of what he is saying is, where I'm efforting that right now. But he kept on telling her, hey, you understand what I'm saying. You know what I'm talking to you about. I saw you in my dream, and you were standing over all these white bodies, like, you know, just dead white bodies.
And they were all dead. You walk over the dead is what he said.
Yeah, you walk over the dead. And, you know, I remember thinking, oh, well, that's going to be the Guilty Remnant. This is Holy Wayne's war that he's waging against the Guilty Remnant, probably not even knowing that he'd be doing it. Of course, we eventually find out that it was not the Guilty Remnant that she's going to be walking over. It's the plastic fake bodies.
They were plastic?
Yeah, those weren't real bodies.
Oh my God, I thought they were real.
No, those were fake.
Okay, so that was a super bad car accident with a truck full of fake dead plastic bodies.
Do you remember the commercial in episode 3 that was playing at Matt's house when he walked in? He saw the lady that worked for him, and it was by a company called Loved Ones.
Isn't that who called Tom's phone, and
correct.
They were like, oh, do you miss somebody?
Yeah, what they do is they have these bodies, and they make a replica of the person that departed.
Die.
And have the ability to bury them, to kind of have that kind of closure. And they spend tons and tons and tons of money. I don't blame anybody for taking advantage of someone's grief, of course, the way they would in this show. But yeah, those were fake bodies that she walks over.
Oh my God. Thank goodness you clarified this for me, because mm-hmm. I was so grossed out thinking these were dead bodies, trying to figure out where these dead bodies came from. And also I was like, God, they must be really freshly dead, because that guy still had color in his face.
Yeah.
His mouth was wide open. Why would they make fake dead bodies with their mouths wide open?
I don't know.
They should be closed and look very peaceful. Now I understand. How did you know they were plastic?
I read it somewhere. And I think I remember from the commercial that they were saying that they created these bodies for people's grief so that they can move on.
I wonder if they smell, like if you can tell them what their cologne was, like how realistic they feel.
Or do they smell like those little toys that you get for your kid, like Cabbage Patch dolls?
Those kind of smell good, kind of like a chocolate vanilla smell.
No, that's such a weird smell. Oh, God. Ugh.
I wonder if they're made by the same plastic company that makes the baby Jesuses.
I wonder. And, you know, I think it's very smart that you say that, because, again, it's replacing the things that you find your faith in. It's the replacing your loved ones. It's finding that other part of you that isn't there, that's not real. There's no, it's tangible, but it's not authentic. And I think that was very poignant that they put that at the beginning of the show, and then again at the end with all the dolls from the loved ones.
Would you want a fake plastic one of me if I suddenly disappeared? So you could say goodbye to me?
Well, how hot is it?
I mean, it would look like me right now. Granted,
Well, you write, like, right this very second?
Wash your mouth. You say I'm beautiful no matter what, just because in my pajamas.
Your hair is a mess.
Listen, it's been a long day. Would you want to say goodbye to me with something that looked like me?
No, because I feel like, well, it's hard for me to answer that because the situation right now, of course, is totally different. You're alive. You're here. I get to experience you every day. Would I say that right now? No, I probably wouldn't. I would feel like that it isn't authentic. It's it's wrong. It's a facsimile of you. It's not real. How can I say goodbye to you if it's not real? But then again, if you were to just depart out of nowhere and I didn't have a chance to say goodbye, I didn't have a chance to look at your eyes before you left or anything and know where you were going, I might think otherwise. I might say, yeah, give me that damn body. I'll pay however much money. I have to do this for me. I have to let go for me.
I don't think I'd buy one for you.
Oh, thank you. That's very nice of you.
Well, I'm cheap. And in my, like, I'm just cheap. I would. This is the difference between you and I. You spend money on nice things. I would probably burn some of your clothes. You know, if I needed to, like, do some kind of a ceremony, I'd go take some stuff. You know what I would take? I would take your college books, those stupid college books that have taken up so much room in our house. Oh, my gosh. The moment you die, I'm probably going to go and burn them as a cremation process.
You know, if you're going to burn them, I want you to do a Viking funeral. I want you to put them on a boat, light them on fire with a Nerf gun.
You got it.
That's what I want you to do.
I don't know if I'll use a Nerf gun, but I'll burn them on a boat for you. That's what I'll do. So I would not spend money to buy a doll. Okay, so then we find out that Christine is pregnant. I didn't know she was pregnant.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so he banged Christine. Wayne banged Christine, and she's not only pregnant, but she is 12 weeks pregnant. So this happened a while ago, and it's been 6 weeks since they saw him. Yep. So Christine and Tom have been on the road for quite some time. The way that she treated him when she was saying, she was being a little brat, and this really showed her age. So when she got hurt and bruised and they're in the hospital and the woman gets this all nasty face because she's very protective, and I understand, and I actually appreciated it. I mean, 1 + 1 = 2. She thought Tom might have beat Christine.
Mm-hmm.
But I hated how Tom was saying, okay, Christine, let's go. And she said, say that my getting beat up wasn't my fault, and then I'll go. Are you kidding me, Christine? Like, Wayne, do you remember all those crazy people who were trying to shoot all your little friends with Wayne? And remember how Wayne was like, Christine, stay with Tom. He's going to protect you. Mm-hmm. Now you decide to be a little teenage punk and be like, I'm not going.
Tell me it's not my fault.
Until you say it's not my fault. Like, whatever, girl. And instead, Tom has to run out by himself. So I really don't like Christine for multiple reasons right now.
There is no excuse for being that kind of dumb. You're putting yourself in danger. You're putting the person that's supposed to protect you in danger. All for what? Just because you're a dumb little bitch? Get out of here.
You don't need to call her that.
Sorry, it's Jesus' birthday. I forgot.
Watch out. Speaking of Jesus' birthday, someone was very merry and in the spirit. I was so excited to see Jill home with her friend, mm-hmm. leaving a gift under her Christmas tree, and they were listening to Christmas carols.
I know. Wasn't it very nice?
It was. And Jill's friend, what's her name? The slutty friend?
Amy.
Oh, Amy. Why was she eating Kevin's sandwich? Like, I'm sitting there saying, this girl, like, eats all their food all the time. Which, to be honest, that's actually what I did. I'd go to my friend's houses because my parents used to go on these crazy, weird, healthy diets. So I used to go to my friends' houses and just eat all their food. All the time. Their parents knew it. They would invite me over and I would be like, hey, do you have any Doritos?
Was it me or was she eating it like in a very sexual way?
She's slutty.
Yeah, that's what she does.
And Kevin looked really hot in that scene.
Oh, he looks hot in every scene.
I mean, he was decorating a Christmas tree. I can't even handle how hot that is. I love Christmas. So
I love when he's like, hey, are you enjoying my sandwich?
Yeah. What the heck is wrong with her? So Jill then gets upset because her dad, Kevin, tries to put her grandfather's Christmas ornaments on the tree. Christmas ornaments are Christmas ornaments, Jill. Get over yourself. But this once again rings home that this isn't their house. Mm-hmm. And it also probably means that they just recently moved in.
Yes. Which means,
like, within this past year, like, they probably spent last Christmas somewhere else.
Yeah. The other thing I liked about this, too, was Jill tells Kevin, you can't replace Jesus. It's sacred. That's cheating. All the while, she knew that she took that thing. So why is she goading her dad into go finding the baby Jesus, right? The one that the one that's missing. Why is she doing that? What's the point?
Because teenage girls suck. This is another note I wrote down. I hate teenage girls. I am so thankful that we had a son, because she is. She's just doing this to play with her father. She knows that the one person who's going to get a heck of a lot of, fine, I'll swear, he's going to get a lot of shit. Okay. Mm-hmm. The mayor's giving it to him. A lot of people are getting after him saying, where's baby Jesus? Where's baby Jesus? And she took baby Jesus and mm-hmm. she's just rubbing it in his face. You can't replace him.
Do you think she's looking for attention from him?
I just think she is messed up.
Yeah.
Completely messed up. Girlfriend needs a therapist like last year. Seriously, she needs a better best friend. Her best friend is not very reliable. I think it would do her well to be a girlfriend of one of the ping pong boys. They seem to have good heads on their shoulders.
Those guys, oh my God. I know everybody loves the Carver twins, and they all think that they're super hot. I'm not getting it. I really don't see it. You know, if you came up to me and was like, hey, Justin Theroux is pretty smoking hot, you know what? I can go that route. But these guys, and they're like goofy. And,
I love goofy. I love the nerdy goofy, like when they were like, we don't get high. Like, you're so preciously cute. And how did they get baby Jesus? When they find him and they leave it on Kevin's doorstep, did one of them swim out into that frigid lake that had icebergs on it?
Yeah, because they're on the friend zone. They are totally friend zone, dude.
Are they
There's
doing
no way.
It to save Jill, or are they doing it because I thought that they were so frightened that Kevin wasn't going to let them go to college that they were like, man, you need to go save that doll.
Dude, we're going to get our asses kicked by the chief.
Oh, my God. Goodness. So Kevin is planning, hopefully, on kicking someone else's ass at a riot. He's like planning for it, and he goes and he sees the mayor, who is just always so mean to him. Remember when she was on the phone and she's like, all right, so it's 20 inches. Okay, it's this brand. All right, the white baby. Of course, it's the white baby. And then she tells Kevin he needs to go buy this baby. What I didn't understand, you have that gopher, your assistant, your intern, right next to you, mm-hmm. taking down these notes. Why can't she go buy the baby Jesus?
Because she's the mayor, man. She can do whatever the hell she wants.
No, not the mayor. The intern that was right next to her.
Oh, the intern. Okay.
The intern was right next to her, was taking down the notes, knows that baby Jesus is missing, heard her say where she could get a new one. Just go send the intern. That's what they're supposed to do.
Well, she believes, I think the mayor believes, rather, that after the whole riot thing at Heroes Day, and all the things that are happening with the dogs and these people disappearing, she thinks that Kevin needs a win. And she goes ahead and says that. He needs a win. He needs to make the town folk feel better.
I think she's just being a bully. I think she is just trying to piss on a tree and say, because she could go buy the doll. Her intern could go buy the doll, but instead she tells him, you need a win. No, you know who needs a win? The mayor. Mm-hmm. She needs this party to go off. She needs that baby Jesus. She's the one frantically on the phone trying to get a new one. Kevin could care less.
Yep.
She's the one that needs it, and she's just trying to find someone to pin it on. Speaking of being mean, Kevin then goes off and says, God damn baby fucking Jesus, while he's driving in his
favorite
car.
Favorite line of the night.
Goddamn baby fucking Jesus. I'm probably going to be in trouble just for saying that right now. It was soon to be Jesus's birthday, soon to be Christmas, and he says this, and his car shuts off. Like, totally dies on him. He doesn't have any brakes. Bad things are about to happen. And then he can't even start his car back up.
Mm-hmm.
It goes to show you, he should not swear like that. But his face, he was freaked out.
Oh, yeah. He saw that and he was like, oh, hell no. I've seen this on TV, man. There's no way. This is no good.
What do you think happened?
Maybe the alternator died or the battery kicked out. I don't know. He did something.
The battery doesn't kick out like that when you're driving.
Oof. I don't know. Maybe it exploded in the engine.
No, then it would be a totally different sound. What do you really think happened? Why did his car stop? Do you think that there's something deep to it, or do you think it was just coincidental that it happened after he said?
This is what I think. I think Lindelof sat there when he was writing this script and said, I need any excuse to put the line in, goddamn baby fucking Jesus. And I think he was excited about that. And hey, maybe there was something larger to it. Maybe that there is something larger at play here. I love how the show made it a point to say that this was not the rapture. This was not a biblical thing. This is not something that God came down and did. It was something else.
who said this? Now, have the writers said it, or is it really just the religious figures in the show?
Well, the writers are saying it through the guise of the characters. They made it a point. They're saying, remember the line with the guy for the Denzinger Commission? He says, I think God sat this one out.
Yeah.
So they're making it a point to say that it's not the rapture. Even through Matt, they're making it a point to say that it's not the rapture. My ultimate point is this. They keep referring to all these biblical events. They keep referring to Job. Even like the opening sequence, it's like you're in the Sistine Chapel. You're seeing all these beautiful figures. You're seeing all these gorgeous frescoes. But that has a biblical undertone to it. So is this show biblical or is it not?
It might be, because the writers haven't come out and said this isn't the rapture. Yeah, they're having these doctors, these scientists, or Matt say it's not. But Matt's just a regular human and he's messed up too.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I'm not personally ruling it out. If things like this, goddamn fucking baby Jesus, baby fucking whatever. If this continues to happen, I don't know.
Can we just make sure you say that at least one more time this podcast?
No, I feel like I need to go wash my mouth out with soap. Goodness gracious. So, gosh. All right. I feel dirty.
You need to be like Jim Carrey in the shower, wiping your mouth out with the soap.
God.
In Ace Ventura.
Oh my God! Einhorn is a man!
I loved when Tom ran away and he's sitting in that bus station. I'm just gonna riff on them because I need to get it out of my system.
Okay, go ahead.
So he's waiting in that bus station and these creepy, guilty remnants just creep on him. They're standing there. One of them has a bloody head. She has a bandage.
She's all screwed up.
And they just smoke in butts and they hand him this leaflet. What was it? Like, find out what's all about you.
Yeah, the most important thing
about you
is inside.
And I took that to mean that it's inside your heart. And I was like, oh my God.
You're such an optimist.
The guilty remnants, like, that's what they're trying to say. They're trying to say, don't worry. What's most important is your heart.
It's in you.
But it wasn't.
No, that's it.
It was actually, open this leaflet, see what's inside, because that's the most important thing. And you open up and if there's nothing.
It's just blank.
God, I would be such a gullible person for the guilty remnants. Like, if they were like, here, Mary, have this candy. And it was like full of razors. I'd be like, this is delicious. Oh,
thanks, guys.
Goodness. Oh, God. So Tom's like waiting for this call from Wayne. Mm-hmm. And then he finally gets that phone call, I guess, asking if you want to buy these fake dead people.
I know. Yeah.
And he took that as a sign.
Yeah. Because he asks if he's lost somebody recently. And he kind of has. He's lost his family. He's losing his faith in Wayne. He's losing everything. Finally, he gets something. He can grasp onto it. And of course, like anybody, he hears what he wants to hear. He doesn't hear, hey, have you lost somebody? It's time to move on. He hears, have you lost somebody? Take us and use us with your faith. We can help you.
I would have left because Christine seemed totally fine in the hospital. It wasn't even like she was trying to escape. He goes in. She's still in her little gurney. She would have been taken care of just fine. I would have left with all that money Wayne gave me, and I would have gone home. He said he wants to go home.
I know.
How sad was that?
Oh.
He doesn't even have his phone. He doesn't know how to go to Verizon store and get a new one. He just wants to go home.
And I love how he's also talking to the phone as if it were Wayne, and as if Wayne were God. Again, this whole thing of replacing God, the whole thing of replacing your faith, finding faith in idols that aren't necessarily things in which you should be placing your faith. And he's sitting there speaking to Wayne like this is your last chance. He's looking for proof. He's looking for that one sign. And that's the problem with what he's doing. Not only is he placing his faith in Wayne, it's not even real faith. He's asking for proof. He's asking for something that you should not be asking for if you have faith. That's the idea behind it. You just have it and you move on with it.
Yeah, but faith in Wayne is scary.
Oh,
Wayne is one scary guy.
Wayne, especially when he's not wearing a shirt. Come on, man.
So he decides to go back and he saw this guy that has like a bullseye. So I guess there's the guilty remnants people who wear white.
Yep.
And then there are the hippie bullseye people.
Yes.
Who draw a bullseye on their head and don't wear shoes. So this way, God can find them next time, or excuse me, the creator can find them next time they come to visit.
Yeah.
So if you draw a bullseye on your head, hopefully maybe next time you'll go.
I know we vowed to not talk about the book on this show, and I'm not going to, but I am going to shed a little light on this group. They're known as the Barefoot People, and they are in the book, and I just want to give a little context. It's not some random thing that
so we
that
can
Tom's
call them
doing.
The Barefoot People.
Yeah, they're the Barefoot People, and they want to go back to their roots, and you know, it's some freaking hippie shit. I don't know. It's
but it's like the hippie version of the Guilty Remnant, but these people talk and are nice.
And they're all buddies.
Oh, I like them better. That sounds nice. So I love how Tom just decides that that's going to make him invisible. He says he draws a little bullseye on his head, takes off his shoes.
Totally lame friggin' costume, by the way. Like, the guy just left the hospital and he's being chased by cops and he thinks, hey guys, you know what's going to work? I'm going to put a bullseye on my head and no one's going to recognize me.
You know what else? Also, this hospital's maternity wing security sucks.
They're old and fat.
No, not even the fact that he's like old and fat. When you go to hospitals, do you remember when we had our baby and you had to get like buzzed in?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
You're not allowed on these wings if you're not a significant other or if the friend hasn't let you in. I mean, these are pretty high secure areas generally. I don't know. Maybe she was just being checked out, so it was a little less secure. But yeah, you can't just go walking in there, but he somehow does.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, hey, girl, let's go. And she's all pumped. She's like, oh, you got my lipstick? Word. This is going to be so fun. I'm 16, however old I am.
Where are my gummy worms?
And so he tells her, we're going to leave without your shoes. I hope she has an outfit somewhere in that huge camping bag. God, I'm all set with her right now. I'm all set with her. I'm all set with him. I know that she is a big deal, that somehow this baby is going to be a big deal. I don't know. The baby creeps me out.
Yeah, is the baby the Antichrist, you think?
I think that's what we're supposed to believe.
Yeah, I think that's what they're leading you to believe.
I'm totally grossed out by that baby. I'm afraid it's like a little devil and has like, I'm afraid it's going to be like Renesmee from Twilight and it's going to like eat her from the outside and suck her blood. I really am all set with this baby. When I first saw the bruises, I didn't put two and two together that it was the guy who was trying to beat her up.
Oh yeah.
I thought it was the fetus hurting her.
You've read way too much Twilight.
I'm just saying, if this the Antichrist, the Antichrist probably won't be nice to its mom.
You'd be like, yo, bitch, get me out of here.
You know who is nice?
Who?
Ping Pong Boys.
Oh, God, these guys. I'm not seeing it.
I'm not saying that like they're the hottest things ever. I'm just saying that if they were real life, I would probably want to be their best friend because I think that they're so cute, rapping together, driving their teal Prius.
Seriously, who? Like, dude, you're white. Okay, you ain't supposed to rap. The only white rapper I know is Eminem, and he's actually pretty good.
No, they're not like really rapping. They're just hanging out in their car, having fun, fake rapping.
I can honestly tell you this with no apprehension. I have never sat with one of my buddies and was like, "Hey, bro, want to rap with me?"
No, but you guys will sing like your music that's cool to you.
I don't think so.
What's cool to them?
No,
this
I don't sing with my buddies.
Well, you used to. Like, you guys...
No, I don't think I ever did.
Yeah, no. Whenever Journey comes on, like a wedding, you guys are all jumping in the air,
fist pumping. Different alcohols involved. It's a party. You become these possessed.
These boys are just positive, optimistic people. I know that I sing in the car with my friends.
Yeah, but you're a girl. You can do that.
Doesn't
guys
matter.
Don't do that.
Nope.
All right, listeners, I want to know from you. Do you, as a guy, hang out and sing with your buddies? Do you like rap with your buddies? Like, hey guys,
it doesn't need to be a rap. It can be whatever music genre they like.
Well, fine, whatever. I'll go with that.
I'm saying that people do.
Let us know.
Yeah, maybe you just don't have any friends around here to sing in the car with. Anyway, Kevin is in the car alone. He's driving the truck. When he stops Ping Pong Boys, he's driving the black truck.
I know. I'm telling you, your theory is right. There is no mysterious bald guy. No. Baldy does not exist.
Baldy does not exist because Kevin had the keys. So, of course, Kevin's driving the truck because his car is broken.
Correct. Obviously.
Who knows how it got towed? I don't know. But Kevin had the keys, has no problem just borrowing this truck and driving it all around. It sure is dirty, by the way. So he pulls over the Ping Pong Boys and says, I think my daughter stole the baby. Did she?
Yeah, did you guys help her?
Yeah.
We saw some kid wearing a hoodie in a video, and they're like trying not to answer. They're trying to avoid the whole thing. They're like, oh, sorry, officer. And he goes, hey, did one of you steal the baby? Which one of you is the fucking smart one? You know, like, I thought that was awesome. He's like totally being a dick to these guys.
Which is so mean. But the truth is, Jill Dill did steal the baby. Mm-hmm. And they knew it. And that scene with her and her friends and they're hanging out. Did you see what she was wearing?
No. What was she wearing?
She was wearing a hat that said MPD.
Really?
She was wearing a Mapleton Police Department
God,
hat.
What a little bitch.
Yeah. Well, honestly, it's free swag. Like, she probably gets all these different, you know, police department hats from her dad and stuff. But I just thought it was so ironic that there she is getting the little baby Jesus high. And she's sitting there wearing a hat that her dad gave her. Girlfriend just needs some help. Mm-hmm. And I liked that her friend, Amy, slut girl, mm-hmm. isn't really cool with all of this.
Yeah, I think she sees what Jill is doing. She sees that Jill is just being a real see you next Tuesday to yeah. her dad for no reason, really.
Well, I think Amy has the hots for her dad.
Oh, yeah, damn straight that girl does.
Girl needs to be careful. What was that music, that movie, American Beauty?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Watch out, Kevin. Ugh. Speaking of watch out, a freaking dog jumps out of the truck again. Did you see him when he was driving?
I did. And the funny thing was, is that he like stopped to avoid it. Two episodes ago, the guy's sitting there blowing a whole clip into these packs of dogs. And here he is making sure he doesn't kill these dogs.
I don't know, he's probably going to kill it later.
Oh, my God.
So he's all ruffled and he goes home. And Meg and Lori are on his porch.
Oh, and I thought this was it, baby. I was like, yep, here we go. My sudden theory of the week is coming true. We're gonna sit here. We're gonna be talking and having fun. Who knows? Things might get a little crazy and make some bad decisions together. You never know. Who knows, right?
Did he tell her that she could or could not smoke in the house?
That she could.
And then you saw her put her cigarette out.
Yeah, right then and there. And I thought that was so cute. He's like, yeah, you can smoke in the house. It's okay. No problem.
And then he offers them cookies. I love Christmas cookies. What a fantastic assortment that he was sent home with. Yep. How cute is it that the police department sends him home? He and Jill can't eat all of those cookies. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe.
Well, I could.
Yeah, exactly. So, and she has Meg read a note that she needed to say to Kevin, and she wanted to have Meg read it so Kevin could look her in the eyes.
Yes.
And basically she's going on to say, you were amazing. You were there for me when I came and I had a son from a different marriage and I had a lot of baggage from that marriage. It was bad. You loved my son like he was your own. You've been great to Jill. You've been great to me. And then Kevin's like, just cut to the chase.
Mm-hmm.
Why the heck are you here?
Yeah. Stop reading. What are we doing here?
Yeah. And Meg kept going. Meg was very persistent. She would not stop reading. But finally, Kevin just like said,
shut the fuck up.
Yeah, yeah.
I got it for you, girl.
Thank you. I felt bad swearing again. And he takes what's in Lori's hands and it's divorce papers.
Oh, and then my hopes were shattered.
Oh, why? Why is she wanting to divorce him?
Well, I think the GR is making her do it.
I disagree.
Really? Why do you disagree?
I think that she loves him so much and she knows that she's hopeless, that she wants him to remarry and be free from her.
Oh, very lovey. Very, very lovey.
I think she loves her family so much, but she is just so lost and she wants Kevin to move on.
And she says that she's broken and maybe she's supposed to stay broken and she can't be married. She can't knowingly be married to him when he's sitting there saying, we had vows. We're supposed to be married. And maybe she is sitting there saying, I can't be married to you. You need to move on because I'm so broken.
Yeah.
Because if the I don't deserve you.
If the GR wanted her to do this, Mama Hen Patty would have gone with her, not Meg.
Oh, yeah. Maybe you're right. Maybe you're right.
You would have seen Mama Hen at some point, mm-hmm. you know? And Lori probably wouldn't have been. She would have had to be dragged to do that. Or maybe Mama Hen would have just delivered them on his door.
Yeah. And without any feeling. And maybe Lori saying, you needed to see me. I needed to be here. We needed to look you face to face.
Yeah.
To talk about this. I think that's probably what's happening.
And then Jill walks in when Kevin is yelling at Lori because he's saying, like, I'm not going to divorce you. say it to me.
Yeah, fuck you, say it. Don't tell her to say this shit. You tell me.
Yeah, and he's yelling that. And probably if she finally said it, he would be like, fine, whatever.
I don't blame him for this. I really don't. Because he is married. He loves his wife. And of course, we end up finding out later on in the episode that he did cheat on her. And it did confirm that what he was doing when the rapture happened probably wasn't all wholesome. And it definitely wasn't with his wife. So he probably knows that he's guilty of that. He probably knows that he's fucked up. And he just wants to take his marriage seriously. I wonder if she knows that he cheated on her.
I bet she does.
You think so?
I bet that's part of the reason why she's broken and so messed up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because to my knowledge, nobody close to them disappeared.
Yeah, nobody in their family disappeared.
Granted, like, that doesn't mean that you can't be sad.
Oh, yeah, her family fell apart.
But I think she might have known.
You think so? Well, yeah. Because I feel like she would have said something, or something would have...
I don't know. I feel like her being in the GR has maybe been the past year. So maybe she found out and she knew, and I don't know. Girls often know. They have an intuition.
Yeah, but let's just say for the sake of argument that the intuition isn't there.
I think Mama Hen would have told her.
Well, okay. So then let's just also say this. Kevin is sitting there having this conversation with Lori. And instead of saying, honey, I know I screwed up. I know I cheated on you. I love you. We had passionate sex, and I love going out with you, and you're the best lay of my life, and yada yada. You know what he says? We have vows. That's what's most important to Kevin. And to me, if she knew that he cheated on her, and the ultimate reason that she left to go to the GR was him, in fact, cheating on her, he would address that. He would say, I know I cheated on you, but I love you anyway, and I'm so sorry. I'm embarrassed. I'm mortified. I just want you back in my life.
Maybe she knows, but he doesn't know she knows.
Okay. I could see that.
Yeah.
I could see that. Maybe that's why he's so fucked up, because he doesn't know why she left. She just up and left because she found out, and she didn't say anything. She just took off.
Well, before she takes off in this instance, Jill gives her a Christmas present.
Oh, it's the lighter.
It says, don't forget me. Oh my God.
I know.
This is like the first nice thing Jill has ever done in her entire teenage life.
And she's actually trying to relate to her mother in some specific way, mm-hmm. You know, with the lighter and everything. She knows that the lighter has to be with her mother at all times. And that's her own little way of being with her mother. I think that was just really, really beautiful.
And then she throws it down the drain. Meg says, you could hold on to it. I won't tell, which I thought was really sweet of Meg.
Yeah, and this is why I'm telling you, Meg is going to soften Lori.
She already has. She's already made sure she gets better hair. You know, so Lori drops that down the drain.
Yep.
And then later on, when she's walking home, she's reaching for it.
Yeah.
Did you think she was going to get hit by the truck?
I did. Oh my God. I thought that Kevin was going to hit her.
I was yelling at the screen saying, Kevin, stop looking at baby Jesus.
I know.
He's not going to disappear again.
He's not going anywhere. I promise.
I hate that when people are like not looking at the road.
Oh, God, come on, man. What are we doing?
They did that on purpose to us.
Oh, they totally screwed with you.
That was terrible.
They intercut it like that purposely.
Yeah. Well.
Anyway. Oh, you know what we forgot to talk about?
Who?
Tom not being Kevin's kid. Lori had a lover prior to Kevin.
I wasn't super surprised by this. Were you?
Well, I'm not sure I was surprised by it. I thought it was definitely interesting. Because, you know, Lori was saying to Kevin, you loved Tommy as your own son, even though you didn't have to, even when he hated you for it. And you probably see the reason why Kevin is so attached to Tom and is always trying to call Tom, because he feels like he's his dad. First of all, okay, so what happened with the previous dad? And where is the dad now? Is he dead? Is he gone on? Or who knows?
No, he left them. Tom says, like, my dad left me.
Mm-hmm.
Which I wasn't really surprised by this, because I feel like whenever Kevin has called Tom, he doesn't say, it's dad.
Yeah, no, yes, he does. He says,
does?
Oh, yeah. As a matter of fact, I thought this was kind of weird. He always says, hey, Tom, it's daddy. And I was like, oh, why are you going to call yourself daddy, bro? Your kid's like 20. Like, that's weird.
Well, he started to be, yeah, the picture of him with Tom on his back was pretty young. So, yeah, I guess he has been calling him daddy. You're right.
Yeah.
Poor Tom. Tom needs a hug and he needs to go home. Speaking of Tom, Kevin was sleeping in Tom's room.
I know, right?
There were no sheets on the bed.
That was weird.
God, I hate when guys do that.
And if I could, I would do that all the time. I'm not going to lie.
I know you would. You don't. You hate
no laundry.
Exactly. I hate it. God. Ping pong boys, I bet, do their laundry.
Ping pong boys not only do their laundry, they bleach their laundry. They get like that stuff, the starch that makes their laundry like fresh and shit.
And they save baby Jesus.
How pathetic was that escape? when they drop baby Jesus off at Kevin's house and they're like, the kid like trips down the stairs. He's like, go, go, go. And the car goes and he's like, stop, stop, stop. All I could think of was Spaceballs when the guy's like, I'm surrounded by assholes. Oh my God.
I feel like if you and I ever tried to do anything bad, that's what it would look like if we were trying
to escape. Oh, hell no.
We are not sick.
I'd be like Ocean's 11, dude.
No.
I'd be nailing that stuff.
You know who doesn't care about baby Jesus?
Who?
The entire town.
Oh my God, I felt so bad for Kevin.
How embarrassing was that? So Kevin shows up to the dance and there's the mayor looking all svelte in her dress, mm-hmm. making it all about her again. Oh, look at me. I'm with the band. All you 30 people that showed up to my dance. And he's there saying like, hey guys, guess what? I found baby Jesus. And everyone looks around and they're like, what the heck is he talking about?
Yeah, like what's the big deal?
Who cares about?
And they have that one clap, that one awkward clap.
Yeah, and he's gone through now what, a week's worth of problems to find this stupid doll that she put him through, and nobody even noticed or cared.
Ugh.
That was terrible.
And you probably feel bad for him at that moment because he probably realizes, what the hell am I wasting my time for, man? This shit sucks. Like, what am I doing?
I hope he realized my mayor is a jerk
mm-hmm.
because she put all this stress on me. I wouldn't have cared if she didn't make me feel bad and say I needed to win. Well, he goes around and walks around the school and he ends up seeing Nora.
Yes.
And she's hanging out by her locker. And they talk about how her husband cheated on her. And he's like, yeah, well, I cheated on my wife. And yet somehow this is a flirtatious exchange, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah. There's some stuff happening there. And I love when she asks him, why'd you cheat on her? Well, and he asks her back, you know, is there a good answer to that question? And of course, she says, well, I think I already got my answer.
What did she mean?
I don't know. I'm trying to think of that.
I don't know.
Maybe it's just because he feels dumb for doing it. There is no good answer. There's no good reason to cheat on your wife. There's just nothing you can do, nothing you can say could ever legitimize for cheating on your wife or your husband for that matter.
Nora's a bit unstable. Like, I definitely felt some sexual tension between the two of them,
mm-hmm.
but I also thought as he walked off, Nora kind of had this little like psycho girl look about her. And I was like, watch Nora go shoot him. Watch Nora be like, oh, guess what? You cheated. I'm going to kill every cheating man in the world because I have a gun.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Nora weirds me out a little bit.
They're going to end up together. I got a feeling somehow, some way. It's going to be like one of those misguided relationships. You know, when your buddies get into a relationship and you're like, man.
Like the rebound ones,
yeah,
especially.
Like, oh, you shouldn't be there. Like if you ever watched Dexter, when Dexter gets together with Lila and you're like, oh, man, Dex, come on. Don't be with Lila. That girl's crazy. She's a psycho. I got a feeling that Nora's kind of psycho.
Ugh, definitely.
They need like weird, like stringy violin music. Like,
yeah. Playing. Max Richter needs to get on that.
Mm-hmm.
Nora
Come on,
can
Max.
Have her own little weird theme.
Max, I know you're listening to us. Get on that theme.
So Kevin goes outside. Mama Hen and all of her little biddies are out there hanging out 5 feet away from the school line. But Kevin's like, whatever, just arrest them. I don't even care.
Yeah.
He goes and arrests them. And the cops are like, we got this. We're so cool. Wait a second. There's only like 5 of you guys.
Where's the rest of you?
Yeah. And Mother Hen, little Patty, she's chuckling. She's doing like her silent GR chuckle. It sounds like this. That's me laughing. That's me doing the Mama Hen laugh.
That was really good. Good
Thank
job.
Thank you. Thanks. I try. And then you see bad mom hair break into a house, and it looked like she was holding some weird knife or
I thought
something.
She was going to kill somebody. I'm like, like, lady, who are you going to kill, Mom Haircut?
Mom Haircut is freaking creepy. Whoever this actress is nails this part, because she's like walking into a house, and you see a shot of teenagers making out, and all the other guilty remnants are just breaking into houses. Nobody locks their doors in this town. Okay, Santa comes down the chimney. He doesn't come in your door, so please stop leaving your doors and windows unlocked.
If you see, they had a door locked, but Meg was like, oh, hey, let me open the window that's right next to the door so I can unlock the door. Like, come on, man.
But the other people just kept walking in.
Don't anybody have any alarms in this neighborhood?
I guess not. I guess not. They broke into, like, everyone's house.
Hey, guys, we live in Mapleton. It's 1950s America.
Oh, and they took out all the pictures.
Oh, how creepy was that?
Well, they're kind of dumb because everyone at this point has digital copies. So yeah. They're just going to reprint them at Walgreens.
Yeah, but you know, it's more symbolic,
I know.
I think.
I know. I would have been pissed if I came back from the dance, which was so uneventful. Nobody there looked like they were having a good time. And then to come back and all your pictures are taken.
Yeah.
Ugh.
That would kind of jerk me off a little bit.
Well, you know what it is? You just feel dirty. Like, I've been broken into twice.
Mm-hmm.
And
she
just
blamed it on me, by the way.
I did. I thought that he put dirt on my bed, and then I realized, oh no, a burglar stepped on my bed while he was getting into my room.
And her room was so messy, we couldn't tell what the burglar had done.
No, it
was the same exact state.
I knew. The cops, however, when they came, they were like, oh my God, they took your place apart.
They trashed this room. We're like, yeah, they trashed it, officer.
And I was like, oh no, they stole my piggy bank and my camera. I can tell the two things missing. Anyway, but you still feel really dirty. You feel used, and then you feel just worried that they're going to come and do it again. And by taking these pictures, it goes back to when Mama Hen Patty wrote down to Kevin, there is no family. Because what they just did is they stole these pictures, because a lot of those pictures probably were people that suddenly departed.
The last thing that happened is Kevin has the baby Jesus. And of course, we already talked about the scene where Lori's trying to get the lighter, and we think that he's eventually going to end up running over Lori. But he takes the baby Jesus and he throws it out the window. And I love what happened here. At the beginning of the episode, Kevin didn't give a shit about baby Jesus. And then at the end of the episode, he again doesn't give a shit about baby Jesus.
Just don't say goddamn fucking baby Jesus.
Yes, you said it again. Yes!
Because your truck's going to break.
What I mean is this. Comes back to the misguided faith. Kevin tries to find some solace in the fact that he could find that baby Jesus and does. He tries to find some solace in the fact that it actually matters what he is doing, finding this baby Jesus, threatening little Prius boys and talking to his daughter about it. It matters. The problem is it don't matter. And he eventually realizes that at the end of the episode. And it comes back to that those lines by the Black Keys at the beginning of the episode. I'm just trying to warn you. You do good to move on. No, it won't hurt me none because I'm not the one. It ain't Jesus.
You're so deep.
I know, right? I know. I'm kind of awesome at this.
I just was thinking that, like, if I was going to prank, I would have just drawn a scar on the baby's head so he would have looked like baby Harry Potter.
And yes, Harry Potter reference.
You're a wizard, Harry.
Another one.
I would have left a note. That's how I would have punked the town. Thank you for your depth and you're welcome for my Harry Potter reference.
What do you say we get into listener feedback?
All right, so I'm a cold piece tweeted, this episode is dumb. The police can't arrest him with just suspicion if he didn't hit her.
Well, I'm a cold piece. I think you're probably right. They can't just arrest him. But what they can do is they can detain him and question him.
Oh, she's talking about Tom.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And you know, and they have enough physical evidence there. They got the bruises on Christine. They got his knuckles being all screwed up. There's enough physical evidence there to sit there and say, hey, this is beyond reasonable doubt. It looks like you've done this. And she eventually ended up saying to me, I'm a cold piece, said that there are witnesses and yada, yada. Yes, there were witnesses, but they're all gone. They're who knows where they are. So he could get held and he could get detained.
The Mr. Kyle tweeted about Tom and the target on his head, saying, I mean, it's not like he came in different clothes or got a wig, just a target on the head and left his shoes outside.
I know.
We were right there with you.
I know. That's what we were saying. It was the worst disguise ever. What were they thinking?
Tom wasn't, and yet it somehow worked. Extraneous tweeted, I'm curious to hear any theories about the guilty remnant. Why white?
Well,
why silence? Why smoke? Where and with whom did it start? Now, that's the part I want to know. Where did this start? Somebody who owns a lot of bleach, because all my clothes just recently turned pink. I threw them in with my pig pants, and I don't think I'm ever going to get white clothes again.
Well, I think they wear white because, again, you saw that in that envelope where it says what matters is inside, and you open it up, it's all just plain white, meaning that it's the presence of light. But there's nothing to it. There's nothing physically you can touch about light. You can't grasp it. There's nothing to you. I think that's why it's a physical representation of that uselessness. I think they smoke because that's a physical representation, again, of their faith. That it's a sacrament. It's a sacrifice to proclaim their faith to everybody. And it pisses everybody off, too. Who likes getting smoke blown in their face? Nobody does.
Oh, it's so gross. Now, someone had a question concerning art from last week.
Yeah, our episode art that we do. I put up one of Matt holding the hand of his little sister as the house was burning up in flames. And if you guys get a chance, check out our episode art. I do it every week for at least two or three. And they're actually really kind of cool. As a matter of fact, I want to give credit to one of our listeners who doesn't want credit. I'm not going to say your name. But he actually did what we said about the Damon Lindelof thing with LeBron James. He made it so that the picture was there and Lindelof's head was on LeBron James, and it said we were all witnesses. If you guys haven't seen it yet, go to either our Instagram or our Twitter feed. It's there. It's hysterical. So you know who you are. Thank you so much for doing it. But in terms of this one, the one with Matt and the burning house, she, nice one, Franzie, she said that the fire in one of the windows looks like a burning angel, which is very cool. And you know what? She's right. I didn't notice it, but it does look like a burning angel. And this girl, I happened to discuss this whole thing with her. She actually makes these really cool recap videos of what The Leftovers is about. She always does her top five favorite moments of the show. Go check her out. Her Twitter handle is niceonefrancie, NiceOneFrancie. Really cool videos. She's really funny and she's really smart. Go check those out.
Andrew SWE tweeted a bunch of different questions, one of which was my favorite. Did Departure's clothes also disappear?
Oh, I know, right?
Or are they like, this is my question, are they like the wolves in Twilight when they like bust out of their clothes and you find shards? I think their clothes disappeared with them.
Mm-hmm.
Because when we saw the baby in the car seat in the first episode,
there
was nothing there. So yeah, I think wherever they are not naked.
Yep. L.A. Jones, too, I was having a conversation with him. He wasn't really sure if watching The Leftovers was worth his time. He had only gone through the first two episodes. I was like, bro, watch the third episode with Reverend Matt. It will change your life. And he's like, yeah, you were right. The third episode now totally has me hooked. And at Nahalia says that she's looked up all the music so far, and she's made a playlist of all the music on her Twitter handle. She has like this app that she does it with. Check this lady out too. She's got this really cool app, and she got all the music.
We'll have a link to her on our Facebook page.
Yes.
And also on our website, thelivingreminders.com.
Okay, and one of the last pieces of feedback we had here, I have a little bit of a bone to pick with this guy. At Locke121, he said that he thinks he found the answer to where all the people went in The Leftovers, that they ended up on the island and lost. And he said, well, I was like, well, can you amplify? Can you tell me why you think that? He goes, whoa, the island was a portal in purgatory. They were all dead on Lost on anyway. And I just got to say, and I'm including this in our listener feedback because no disrespect, Locke121, but I hate when people do this, when they don't understand the ending of Lost. They were dead anyway. No, they weren't. So if you listeners have friends that think that everyone was dead on Lost, please correct them for me, because I can't carry the mantle. I can't carry the torch anymore. They weren't dead the whole time. Oh, such a pet peeve of mine. All right, let's get into the tweet of the week. This one comes from @FairlyCertain. This is the girl that we had some conversations with over the past few weeks, how she really hates Lori and she really hates how she abandoned her family and everything. And I decided to make a new segment just based on this tweet. So from every week, from going forward, from now on, we are going to have a tweet of the week. Fairly Certain's tweet this week was, I can't stand Lori. I just can't with her. And you know what? Meg needs to sit on a knife too. And I was like, ooh, ooh, God, that one is brutal, but awesome. So
ouch, Fairly Certain.
At Fairly Certain. Great tweet. Love it.
Yikes.
Tweet of the week.
All right, let's move on to the sudden theory of the week. What do you have, Blake?
Jill hates her life. Jill hates everything about it. She can't commit to anything. She can't even commit to burning baby Jesus. All she wants to do is just be with her family, and she loves her mom. You know what's going to end up happening? Jill's going into the GR.
No.
She's going to join. Going to happen. Guarantee it.
Oh my God.
She's going to join the GR because she doesn't find any meaning in anything that she has. Her friendship with Amy is kind of like shitty. Doesn't have a good relationship with her dad. Doesn't have good friendships. And it, remember how, like, when she was going to light baby Jesus on fire, she turns around and says to everybody, hey, go fuck yourselves. And she goes away and everyone's kind of mocking her. Yeah, go fuck ourselves. Go, you know, chanting that. She's got nothing. And this is the perfect girl that the GR targets. She has nothing in her life. She's going to end up there. It's going to happen. Ugh. How about you? What do you got?
Oh my God, I'm like so Debbie Downer'd.
Oh. Wah, wah.
My sudden theory of the week is that next week's episode is going to have a happy moment.
Happy remnant.
Here's one. I'm still not happy with this show.
Okay.
Like, I like this show a lot. I don't love this show. People might not like that I say that. And once again, I don't love it because I'm not rooting for anyone. And I don't have anyone who makes me laugh or makes me smile.
How about the Prius boys?
The Prius boys are getting there. And that's why I'm thinking, like, maybe they'll even have more screen time next week. I think that there's hope for them.
Yeah.
They might be the little sunshine, but they're kind of annoying.
Yeah, the show definitely needs it.
They need somebody. And I keep thinking, like, maybe it will be one of the other police officers. I don't know. I need someone like me, a little ray of sunshine. And I think that a major complaint for the show has been that it's so sad and so negative and just so down, which, to be honest, that's what would happen in real life.
Yeah,
sure. Happened. I was explaining it to people today who haven't been watching the show, and they said, oh, I heard that it's just like really sad and really down. And I was like, yeah. It's a pretty Debbie Downer topic, like if all these people disappeared. But I'm wondering if people who have been writing the show might take that into consideration and might want to do a little tweaking to give us a little glimmer of something happy.
Yeah, you know, and those people that are sitting there saying, this show is too depressing, I can't get into it. You know what? I can't turn around and say, you're wrong, because they're not. This show is either you like it or you don't. There's like no... I know you just said you don't love it, you like it, but there's no real in between, because it's hard to grasp onto something. You can't. And you have to be in the mood for it. You got to be ready for this show.
Yeah.
You know?
You do not want to watch this show if you've had a bad day.
No. No, no, no. If you have like sharp knives around you or whatever.
Oh, gosh, no.
Not a good idea.
However, it does make you think a lot. And how we were just talking about, is this religious? Is it not? Mm-hmm. They haven't come out and said it's not. And yet we just had this weird thing happen when Kevin swears and says, I'm not even going to say it again.
Dude, come but he on,
says
just do something. It. Just
no,
do it.
I'm not. And, you know, so it really is making you question. It's making you question, what is faith? What do I have faith in?
Yeah.
But I'm just, my sun theory of the week is just a general thing. I think that the show writers are going to add a little bit of sunshine, whether it's in a little character or a little scene, even if it's something like that time when Reverend Matt, you know, had that beautiful baptism. That was a little moment of sunshine. So I think there's going to be a little moment of sunshine in the next episode.
Or the Prius boys trying to get away and they couldn't. They're just
that
so dumb.
That was cute. It was too short, but that was cute.
I'll tell you know, again, the natural comparisons to Lost are there. And the thing with Lost was that even though there was these crazy things happening around them, and there was this crazy island and smoke monsters and polar bears, and you could relate to the characters. You could find a way to fall in love with Sawyer eventually. You had Hurley. You had Jack, even though he was screwed up in the head because of his father. For someone who has daddy issues, you can get involved in that. You get it. The problem that you have as a viewer with this show is that you can't relate to somebody in a situation that is completely foreign to you. Even though they're trying to act normal, you've never experienced people around you disappearing for no reason other than just because. So I can see how people don't like this show and can't get involved with it.
Please hang up and try again.
All right, what do you say we close out the show?
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, we would love to hear from you. If you want to get that link to that awesome playlist or get in touch with Blake and I, you can head on over to thelivingreminders.com. Find out everything you need to know right on over there.
You can get us at Facebook too, at facebook.com/livingreminders.
We are also on Twitter, where we have so many great conversations with you all. Our handle is super easy to remember. It's just at Living Reminders.
And we love email. Oh my God, I love email. So if you want to get in touch with us like Serena did, you can get us at livingreminders@gmail.com. And then you can also check us out on the hotline too. We love your feedback, the Twitter and Facebook and everything. But we really want to hear you guys. We really want to hear your voices. We want to have that kind of personal conversation. You can get us on the hotline. The number is on our website. But just for our purposes right now, it's 503-454-6730.
And most importantly, if you could check us out and rate and review us on iTunes, we would greatly appreciate it. Help spread the Living Reminders lovin'. And we actually got a review from somebody that we'd like to share with you.
This one came by the way of D. Shuckster. He says, the hosts have a great rapport, obviously because they're married. Oh, that's right. And they're fun to listen to. They do a fantastic job of fan interaction. Thank you very much. If you listen to them and communicate with them through social networks, you really feel like it's a conversation. Kudos to you guys. They gave us a 5 stars, which is the only thing I'll ever accept from anybody ever. That's how it goes. But thank you, D. Shuckster. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
We really try on Twitter. We really try on Facebook to actually have meaningful conversations with everybody. That's what's most important to us.
We also have meaningful conversations on our other podcast.
Yes.
It's called ParentCast.
Yes.
Because we're parents. So if you are a parent, if you have kids, if you have friends who have parents, or our parents, I don't know.
Whatever.
Basically, if you know people who have babies, check us out, ParentCastPodcast.com. Blake and I chat about all things parenting related. And we don't swear.
Crazy life. No, that is a completely clean podcast. It's just freaking insane how our lives go with our one-year-old, and we want to share all that stuff with you guys too. So check us out over there too. If you have a kid, you know somebody who has a kid, we have a lot of great information over there.
All right, everyone, thank you so very much for listening to The Living Reminders. I am Mary.
And I'm Blake.
And we are going to see you next week.
Later, guys.
Bye.